My name is Michaela Leek, and I'm here with Sandra Burford. It's April 9th, 2016, and we are in Sanford, North Carolina. Okay, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood?
Okay, I was born in Robeson County in Maxton, North Carolina, to parents Bernice and Robert Davis. And spent my childhood and through 12th grade in Maxton, North Carolina. Typical childhood, I think. Maybe not so typical. My parents were business owners back in late 40s and 50s, and they owned a grocery and wholesale place. So I started in a business background when I was fairly young. Helping at the store and helping at the wholesale side. So I always had a business, whatever aptitude, I guess, because that's what the family was involved with. We lived very close to the school that I attended for 12 years because at that time it was a segregated school. So it was black school and had lots of good memories and friends and good times. So we were all together. Classes kind of moved from first to second grade. We were very fortunate. We had an actual kindergarten teacher that was not at our school, but operated a private kindergarten. So there were those of us who had late birthdays, as it turned out. So we got to go to Miss Rayford's kindergarten for 2 years. So by the time we were in first grade, the teacher, because it's a small town, Maxton, and the teacher knew all about our class. So we had some excellent teachers, and they just started us where she left off. And so we just went together as a group through most of the school into high school, the ones of us that were there. So we had a little bit of an edge, we thought, because we did have the kindergarten and had that, which a lot of schools at the time, that wasn't a prerequisite for going to school, you know, but we were fortunate. And I lived, I could see the school from my home. So if the first bell rang, I could still get to school on time. So that was a big thing. And so I didn't have to take the bus. And the kindergarten, we could also see the school from that lady's house. So that was kind of neat. Grew, you know, through the years, went to school there, had friends. As I said, I worked some summers. I had an uncle that managed a place at Atlantic Beach, South Carolina, which at that time was the Black Beach, since we couldn't go to Myrtle Beach unless you were, you know, in the kitchen or something of that nature. So my uncle managed a place during the summers for a doctor in South Carolina. And when I was 12, 13 or so, my dad, who trusted his brother very much, allowed me to go part of the summer and work. So I waited tables and cleaned rooms and did a little bit of everything, because they had several rooms, and they also had like what we called a patio, a dance place right on the beachfront. So, and with a little restaurant. So I grew up, you know, being in the business world for a long, before I was you know, a teenager even. And because my uncle had managed the place, Hurricane Hazel, let me backtrack. Hurricane Hazel came and destroyed his first place that he managed. It was a multi-level hotel, and with and a very nice place that a lot of black people came in the summer, because it was a good place to vacation. And after the hurricane, the doctor decided that he wouldn't build anything back quite that you know, several stories. Mm-hmm. So he built just a one-story type place with some rooms, and also had the dance patio and a little restaurant. So since I was, my parents helped there on the weekends since I was five. So, you know, I always knew the water. I mean, we always had something to do. My parents were very, my mother was also in her spare time. She was a beautician, hairdresser, and had her own little shop at the back of her house. So just always knew you worked and you did things, and you went to school and came home, did chores and worked, and that was it.
Okay. Do you think that was something that your parents explicitly said to you, or something that you just picked up from like seeing them and their work ethic?
Probably just picked up. My dad was a very hard worker and worked loading and unloading a wholesale truck. I mean, he actually took the orders from smaller stores and delivered to them. So he was a hands-on person, and saw him work many long days, even as a child, even, you know, with help from my uncle and everything. So I think it was just, you saw it. And I had other family members. My mother had seven sisters and a lot more in the area with their husbands, and everybody was always working, or if they didn't have their own business, whatever they were working at. Some were teachers. I had an uncle and two uncles that had dry cleaners business, and those were the kinds of things that you didn't see a lot of blacks doing at the time. So everybody just had to work, and they knew that that's the only way you could get ahead and try to prepare, help prepare your children. So that's just what we picked up on.
So was Max in a place that it was possible for blacks to own these kind of businesses, or was it rare?
It was, when I was young, it was probably a rare, and probably still is probably a rare thing, especially back in that time, because my dad had his wholesale from the late 40s into the 50s. As a matter of fact, he and his brother taught school initially. They were when you could get your teaching license in 2 years. They both went to Fayetteville State, and they were able to do that. And they came back and taught school, and then they decided that they could do something like open a store, open a hostel, and provide that service. And they were given the ultimatum, either you teach school and let that go, or you do that. So they let the teaching go and started that full force. And I won't tell you it wasn't hard, because it was, even for my, when I was born and remember, you know, can remember. But that was something they wanted to do. And then, like I said, I had an uncle who married, I had two uncles who married two of my mother's sisters, and they opened a dry cleaners in Maxton. So it was just at a time, and they were the kind of people that said, well, this is what we're going to try to do. And it wasn't easy, but they were successful in doing it for the years that they were there. And at that time, a lot more mom and pop type things. So, you know, it was just a good time for the town.
When you say it wasn't easy, do you, is there something specific you mean about that? Or,
well, of course, most of your business is going to be, for the most part, usually blacks, you know. And my dad had competition with white people who had wholesales and who could provide things sometimes lower, you know, costs, and even at the store. So people wouldn't always take advantage of the fact that there was a black, you know, person offering same types of goods and services. And you had to combat, you know, you had to keep working through that, you know. I mean, you had people who might have been your church members or in a club with you that didn't even come to your store to buy their groceries. And it's the same cans that you pick up at a store, now, you know, or the same meats, you know. My mother had her license, I mean, all of that. So it's something you have to work through, and I saw them do that. But we also had, at the time, we had a black theater, because, you know, we could only go on the balcony of the other theater when we were teenagers. So some of the blacks, and my dad and uncle were part of that group, opened a theater for us so that the kids had some place to go. Mm-hmm. And so that was neat. So we just came from a time when people were trying to do what they could, even though it may not have been as supported by their own race. My dad and had a lot of customers that were Indian, because we're from Robeson County, so we have blacks, Indians, and whites, and a lot of our customers, especially at the store, were Indian. So they were, you know, patronizing my dad, you know, more than some of his black, you know, counterparts were. But you just went on anyway.
You think there was a reason for that?
Unfortunately, like crabs in a barrel, we just don't like to see anybody else doing anything, especially then. And who do they think they are, you know, trying to do that? And it's always been, you know, go here. So, and I think you just have to rise above that mentality. So that's what they did. And, you know, you saw it and you thought, okay. I mean, I remember that there was a pool in town that we couldn't use it when I was there, but I know since I left, it was like, you know, that was the thing, because, you know, we went to lakes and other places, but there was a group that had a pool. but they didn't allow black people to use it. I think they do now, but, you know, it's a different take on it.
You mentioned that the kindergarten you said you attended for 2 years, you said the word private. Did your parents have to pay?
I think very little. When I say private, it was another black lady who could teach,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't, because she had four or five kids at the time, and that was a way for her to make sure that the kids got off to a good start. So what they paid was just probably enough for Miss Rayford to make sure we had lunch, because, you know, we all already had eaten breakfast, so it wasn't like a fee. When I say private, because now they do it through the schools, but that wasn't done through a school, because I don't even think the white school in town had a kindergarten. Their kids then could go to school when you were six. So.
Do you have any siblings?
No.
No.
I'm an only child. Mm-hmm.
Okay. How is that, life as an only child?
Everybody asked that, and I'm going, I don't, you know.
You don't know any different.
I don't know any different. As she said, most of what's left now are first cousins, and in one case, my other cousin in Maxton was, she was the only one older than I was, but only the only one. The others, just there were a couple in the family, so I didn't know any different. And, you know, where I live, there were kids, you know, friends that you play with and stuff and things to do. And I think the only thing with that is sometimes you're held to a different standard by family, because you are the only one, so you're supposed to do certain things, or you're supposed, you know, like, okay, fine, but you just learn to, okay, roll with the punches.
Mm-hmm. And what was the name of the K-12 school that you attended?
R.B. Dean. It was R.B. Dean High School by the time we finished, but we started out, I think it started out as Robeson County Training School, which just sounds terrific. But one of the principals there passed away, and they renamed it, which was a good thing. Mm-hmm. So it became R.B. Dean School, and then it went through 12th grade.
Who were you closest to as a child, and why do you think so?
Is this family or?
And whoever you.
Of course, you know, you're close to your family. I had a neighbor that was a year older than I was, and so we sort of grew up, Carolyn and I kind of grew up together, and she was extremely smart. She's one of these people who didn't have to study. Love that. And she was an only child. She'd been raised by her grandparents, but they lived next door to my parents, so, you know, we always did a lot of things. We attended the same church, that kind of thing, you know, together. And she finished the year before I did, and didn't go on to college at the time. She, matter of fact, went to family members in New York. So kind of, you know, she was back in the area after that. And, you know, we still had some ties. But, I mean, growing up, we were kind of pals, because we'd come home, we could have a little together time, play a game, do whatever, and then we both had chores, we're right there, so it was good.
Looking back, what was life like growing up in the South during the late 40s, early 50s?
Of course, I don't remember much before the 50s, but you were very used to things being the way you thought they were, until in the late 50s and 60s, things started changing throughout the country, and we saw that the South was even more behind. I mean, because you just become complacent to it almost, even though we had things going. And so then it opened up things like, okay, well, that is possible, you know. I can remember being the first black person to work in a store in my hometown as a kid, you know, like a, they would call it co-op. Now it wasn't co-op, but I worked a few hours a week, like Saturdays or whatever. And it was a drugstore, little gift shop, for lack of a better word, because like I said, this is a small town, so people do, you know, a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And they hired me. I didn't do medicines or anything like that, but to wait on customers, even though my dad had that and I was doing that, but he thought it was an opportunity for me to see other customers, you know, because basically most of their customers were white, and interact and get that, you know, exposure. So I did that for maybe a summer or two, you know. But like I said, between the business there and working at the beach, I was pretty much, you know, already working. So that was just something for the exposure.
How was that? Do you remember any, like...
It wasn't, because the couple that ran it, which was a husband and wife, were, I guess, decent people, you know, fairly fair. I think most of their customers just accepted it for, you know, for what it was. And I wasn't treated, you know, badly by anybody. I mean, if somebody, I guess, didn't want me to help them, they'd wait till the doctor's wife, you know, was free with what they were doing. And they'd wait on them, but I don't remember that being, you know, a problem. Like, well, that people come and leave the store or anything. No, I don't remember that.
Okay, so my next question. I know the war was over, but
yes.
Was your dad a part of that, or?
Neither my father nor my uncle were in military, but they... It was a very busy time for the Maxton-Larnberg area because they had an air base there during the war. So even after the war, there were still things going on. It was, I think, what I hear most people that talk about, like my parents, it was kind of exciting. It brought a lot of different people to the area. As a matter of fact, as I said, my father and uncle were industrious to do different things. They actually operated an area, we called it the gym, but it was a place where people could come, grown folk pretty much, could come, and they had parties, but they had bands, more the black bands at the time, to come. Dizzy Gillespie, some other, you know, brought their bands. So they got to meet the people. I'm sure I met some of them, but I wouldn't remember because I was little. But they were trying to provide some way to capture, and plus they drew people even from as far away as Fayetteville to that because they would have, I guess, headliners of the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, Duke Ellington, I think, you know, but so, people like that were able to come, and so they drew people from as far away as Fayetteville and of course from South Carolina because Maxton is around the border, it's not that far from South Carolina, so. They did that, and it just the end. You know, it's just that you always see something going on, something trying to be positive. I mean, they couldn't have that type of thing now, probably with all the different things that have come. But back then, they didn't have any problems, and it was a known thing. And I mean, it was something that anybody would be, you know, would feel comfortable coming to. And it was the people who could pay, you know, because it was close to cover charge,
mm-hmm.
you know, to come in, I don't remember of any them saying that they had any real problems, you know, like the police had none of that, so everything. But it was a different time. But it was exciting because they had a lot of people coming in and out the area. Yeah.
So the civil rights movement, you were about 8 when that, like,
when it first
started.
Okay. But then, of course, everything was so slow going. I can remember when they first did a lot, of course, we're doing marches and sit-ins and all of that. But when they first said, now you're able to go wherever you want to go and eat, that my father said, okay, well, they said that. So Maxim was small anyway, so we didn't have a whole lot of places. We went to Aberdeen, Southern Pines. And at the time, it was a Howard Johnson restaurant. That was right on 15501 and 1 as you go into it. It's now something else. And we went there one Sunday after church. My parents, myself, and my girlfriend Carolyn. And my dad said that my mother and Carolyn were a little were very nervous about going. I guess I didn't really have any thought. You know, he said that's what we can do. So I thought my dad knew what he's doing. So that's what we ate. And, of course, people looked at us, but, you know, it was the thing. So that was my first thing. Before that, when we traveled, and my parents believed that you took vacations, a lot of times we went north, went to New York. But the times that we did go south, like we went to Florida several times, I can remember even as a child having to find the part of town that was black. So, because if you wanted to eat something or really find a good place to stay, that's what you had to do. I remember that. Or, like my father said, well, we won't stop there because I'm not going to go in a back door to get anything to eat or whatever. So, things like that you remember from a child. But, you know, then with all the changes coming, you thought, well, okay, now we don't do that anymore. But as a child, you don't look at it like, oh, it's, I mean, because it was the way that everything was at the time. It was only when we started seeing change, you're like, it doesn't have to be that way. And why? So.
Did you admire your dad for that, for his?
He was always just that way, you know. Mm-hmm. He's just, he was the first in our town. He was the first black to even run for, he ran for mayor. He didn't win, but he ran. I'm like, okay. He didn't mind trying. He said, won't make it, but they need to know that other people have ideas and can do that. So, you know, you think about that now, you think, now that could have been problematic for him, but, you know, he did, he took it on faith. My dad ended up years later, he was late in his life, he ended up being a member of the North Carolina House of Representatives. He was appointed, and then he ran one term, he won one term, he didn't win the second term. So, I have to think that came about because all through his life he was, well, he was in NAACP, and because he was always doing things and trying things. And there was a gentleman from Red Springs, which is another small town down there, who was a representative. And he was asked to move into something else in the state, and they needed somebody that, at that time, the county, it was three counties. I think it was Hoke, Robinson, and Scotland. I think that's what it was, and they needed somebody else. And as my dad said, out of the blue sky, somebody called him and wanted to come and sit down, and they asked him if he would complete that term for the gentleman, and then he ran one additional time and won. And then after that, he wasn't successful, but he said he felt like he had a chance to see it, you know, from what politics really is like in a different venue. And his picture's actually in Raleigh. My daughter and I went, you know, my mom was saying it, and she, I don't think she ever got up there to see it after they were saying they'd put them on, even though they've redistricted and done all the stuff. And we went to see, I said, that's my dad. Yeah.
Did your dad receive any backlash for running for mayor?
In your time? Not that I know of. I mean, other than people just said, why are you doing it? You know, it's called, and like I said, his clients were basically blacks anyway, so his customers were that based, so yes, he figured he could try. And I don't think the whites in town thought anything other than just the fact that somebody else wanted to try, even though, you know, he said, I know I won't make it, but I need to let them know that we deserve a voice, we deserve to be heard, and I think it accomplished that. He was on the town commissioner for years, you know, after that, so just went the way he could.
Did your dad's like passion or drive for change, did it inspire you or make you feel obligated, or did it affect your life in any way?
Other than the fact, as my daughter said, that I was told that I was going to an integrated college, not, you know, black, so don't think Central or, you know, because that's not where you're going to go. That part was, you know, you're entitled to go there, so you need to go. And you can do what you're, you know, you're academically equipped. I think you can handle it. So that part was okay. Now, I won't say that was, you know, but you're like, okay, well, I say I can do this, so I guess I can. Yeah.
Okay, so you went to undergrad at UNCG first?
Yes.
What took you, did you live in UNCG? Or live in Greensboro and then go? Or
no.
Okay.
I applied to Carolina and to ECU. I got accepted at ECU. And this is 65, so, you know, but I got accepted there. The letter came back from Carolina and said that they were not admitting females in their accounting / business program. That in order to do that, I would have to go to UNCG and transfer. And so, I'm like, okay, you know, I could do that, or I could go to ECU, but my dad said, At that time, it had a reputation. He said, no, you don't need to go to party school. Then you go to UNCG and you transfer because that's what you said you're going to do. You're going to go into accounting. And if that's the way you have to do it. At UNCG, they had a business, I know it was business education, and a business administration type thing, but I was really interested in accounting, so, and it wasn't offered there, so I'm like, but, you know, I want to go, I want to do what I said I was going to do, and so I went there for 2 years, and then transferred.
How are your experiences at UNCG?
Interesting. I met a very good friend that we're still friends. There were a lot of blacks coming in the year I was in, 65. We were not the first, you know, there were some that were there before. They were kind of like our big sisters. They were telling us, don't go here, don't do this, don't take this class, because that, I actually ended up getting one of the first classes I took was a history class, and they told me that that was a very racist instructor. I didn't have a choice, you know, I mean, it's when you, you know, first year, you get placed where you get placed. And I was all upset because I thought, oh, that's going to make, you know, I'm not going to do what my father said. You go, you do the best that you can. If you really think that there's a problem after you've been in the class, then you need to let us know, you know, come and try to find out. I think I actually earned a B in that class. And I thought, okay, if, you know, if this is what are you going to be up against? Because we were steered away from some instructors because they just didn't want us to be at UNCG. And there was a big group of girls coming in at that year, a big group of black girls coming in. And we met, and the second year, I mean, I knew I was going to transfer. That was already a given. I had good friends. One friend of mine, at the end of our first semester of our sophomore year, was not able to return. And she was probably one of the smartest ones. Some of the rest of us were there, you know, praying through and staying up all night. But she was very smart. And she didn't maintain the grades to stay there. And her family was not, they weren't in a position to really know how to help her. Do you know what I'm saying? Luckily, she had two older sisters who kind of came and helped her try to find out what was going on. And one of the instructors said to her sister, if I had known that that grade was going to be the cause, you know, the top that made her not be able to come back, I would probably have done something different. So, you know, we're like, oh, no, they didn't. But, I mean, I'm sure they told the truth. And so she could not return and ended up being out that semester, and then she went someplace else to finish out her degree. So that kind of left the rest of us with the taste like, okay, is we still see it's here. You know, we were through the first year, so you kind of think, and we're thinking, no. So I had no idea. I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to Carolina, and that's a lot bigger. Oh, Lord have mercy. But, you know, it is what it is. So, I mean, and UNCG, they, you know, I met a lot of good people. I had some good classes. We ate ice cream. There used to be a place called Yum Yum Shop. And we used to,
still there.
Is it? Mm-hmm. And we used to go. That was our treat. You know, over the weekend, oh, I gotta get a break. We go get ice cream, and I loved ice cream, so we get a break. And it was a good group of girls. They all went on to do, most of them went on to do good things, you know. And it was just that one incident really kind of hit home with all of us. So I think everybody tried even harder to make sure that we finished.
So the first sit-in in Greensboro was in 1960.
Yes.
So. Being in Greensboro during that time, did you feel like compelled to, I don't know, be an activist or like be a part of the movement or?
Not necessarily. I mean, of course, you know, we went to, you know, everybody had to see where everything had happened. You know, that was a given. And I think we just tried to maintain, while we were in Greensboro, just maintain a level of, okay, we're here. Maybe they don't want us here, but we can do what we're supposed to do, and we're good students and good people, and that's what we're going to do, and that's how you show people that all this other stuff that you're doing is just stupid. And that's, and you know, what we did. We did a lot of things with Bennett and A&T in terms of us personally going over and visiting either friends that we knew or you know, some of the girls, like I said, I was with a lot of girls that were from Greensboro, Winston-Salem area, and they had, you know, so, okay, we go visit, you know. I had a couple of family members. I had one family member that was there as an undergrad after I was, so, you know, people to visit just to get off campus and see another side. So I think we felt like we could prove things that what had been fought for was certainly justified, and that we were continuing it by trying to make sure we got our education and do the things we were supposed to do. And there were groups, but nothing violent or anything, just kind of groups to keep you aware of what's going on. So, you know, in that, but more low key.
Were you part of any of those groups?
Just the ones, you know, when we had school, like school groups, like black students getting together, just kind of interacting, trying to see if we were still relevant, if things were still relevant. I think that's the biggest thing, but not like a named, you know, group. And I think at the time, it was a youth, like NAACP, a lot of us were members, you know, just to kind of keep our hands on the pulse, because things were changing still. So we kind of wanted that involvement, but we knew we were there for a purpose.
So your involvement with the youth NAACP, was it more like a just keeping you up to date and like informational kind of thing?
More informational. I mean, we weren't part of any sit-ins, whatever, you know, other than if the question came up as to how do you feel about something or don't do something this day in, you know, trying to support them, then we try to do that, you know, within whatever reason we could, because most of us were saying, well, we're here and our parents are going to expect us to maintain a certain thing, but we can do limited, you know, some things, because we want to show that we know that there's a struggle still going on.
So your transition to Chapel Hill, looking back, how was UNCG different than UNCG, or than Chapel Hill, I'm sorry?
Of course, it was a smaller campus. Mm-hmm. I had a lot more girlfriends. When I transferred to Carolina, I did not have that group of girlfriends. And matter of fact, most of my classes were with males. So I ended up having a group of guy friends, because that's who was in accounting, and, you know, were fellas. And so I'm like, okay. And sometimes with fellas, it's, they're more prone to be violent. Not violent, but to want to antagonize, keep things going. I think sometimes females are a little bit more laid back. So you get involved, you're like, okay, now what are they getting ready to do? And am I going to be involved with that or whatever? Because a lot of them were, there was so much going on. So you just try to keep pace with what's going on and continue with what. But then UNC looked a lot safer, perhaps, than UNC did at the time.
All right, so moving into your time at UNC, what's your first memory that you have of going to school there?
Moving in the first day, and so that I was in Connor dorm. I was trying to think. I said, Lord, what dorm did I live in? It was Connor at the time. And moving, you know, I had my room assignment, and going into the room, and my roommate was already there. And my dad took me, because my mother had to work that day. My dad took me. And we were getting things, and we noticed the young lady and her family were missing. They decided that she didn't need to be in the room with me. So for a while, I had a big room with, not big, but, you know, by myself. And then they found another student who was a transfer from Campbell College, I think she did. She was a military family. Our parents were military, rather. And she became my roommate. And that was a little bit, I always remember that. I'm thinking, I guess I, you know, must have been contagious or something, that this child felt like, I mean, just, as far as I can tell, ordinary girl, but I don't think her parents liked that idea. This other girl was white, but military, she probably had more. And that was my first memory of what it was going to be. I'm like, okay, this is going to be interesting again.
How was your relationship with the new roommate?
It was okay. She was coming at things from a different angle. I think I was there. I knew I had to get done what I was supposed to get done. She was a little bit more free-spirited. Can I say that? We were roommates for the first year. I was trying to think. First year. And then she was under the impression that, because I, like I said, tended to have more of guy friends than girl, because that's who were in my classes, and that's who I kind of hung with, that maybe I would want to get a smaller room or, you know, do something different. And I said, I don't plan to leave. I was assigned here first. I'm going to have this room next year. So she moved in the second year with a friend she had. And actually that year, because I was a regular senior my second year, regular because I went an extra semester. So I was, and I had a freshman. It was part of a program that they were starting to give undergrads, to give fresh, you know, something with a senior to kind of give. And my roommate happened to be a young black lady from Greenville, North Carolina. And I don't think her parents were real. Let me back up. So I did 60, went there in 67 and 68. In the summer of 68, I got married. But I was going back to school. So her parents get this, you know, they're pairing up and they see that I'm married. So they're probably like, who is this person? So they met me, and then I went down to visit with their daughter. I think then that was fine. And she was a really good roommate, you know, just really good. As it turned out, for my very last semester there, she went in with her, with another young lady who was, then they were both sophomores, because I was going to be late, you know, leaving. And that was fine. You know, I didn't have a problem. I had somebody for like a half year, and that was, it was okay.
Did you have the option to do this program, or did they just kind of assign you this freshman? And
they just kind of assigned it. And at the time, I think what they were trying to do, because Caroline, like I said, didn't have a whole bunch of black females, unless they were in nursing, which is what, well, she was in science and nursing and going into research, was one of the rooms. They were trying to assign the young ladies coming in to somebody who'd already been on campus and kind of knew the ropes to give them, because, you know, once again, you're still in the late 60s. Excuse me. So you've got people coming from varying backgrounds. Some have come from integrated schools. Most of them came from segregated schools. So, or they hadn't been integrated very long when they came to college.
So what would you, how would you describe student life at UNC while you were there?
It was there and I was there. I mean, I was probably more into the fact that I had to study. I knew groups. As I said, I hung out with a lot of the fellows because a lot of our classes were ingrained, you know. I did a lot more with them. After the young ladies came, the freshmen that I met, I kind of, you know, I'm like a big sister to them, so I try to do good things. The campus life was okay. I mean, I met some students from other backgrounds, some white students and others, you know, that were good people, I think. Everybody has to adjust to everybody. So it was really, I think, an adjustment for all of us at that time. Even the girls who were, you know, your neighbors and next room, whatever, or you're on the way the bathrooms and things were set up then, you know, you'd be several of you not showering together, but with the sinks and things set up. So just getting to know people and try to do that. And a lot of times I told them, I said, I don't go to the things that you all, because I'm in the business school and I'm with guys, and I've got to hang with some of the things that is about that, because I've got to get finished, you know. A lot, and this is no reflection on anybody, a lot of students were there, especially white females, because it was going to be where they met their husband, or they were, and nothing, they were either going into some field that they knew, you know, they probably would have to work at because they were going to finish school and be a mom or a housewife or whatever. And I'm going at it from, I got to get out of here, you know, and have some job that's going to maintain me. And so we're coming at it from a different, so I didn't do, I mean, yeah, I ate meals with, you know, we might say we'll meet at such a time to eat or something like that. But in terms of going to a lot of, I didn't pledge anything, so I wasn't anything involved with that. I just sort of did, you know, whatever at the time. Like I said, because I was kind of probably more low-key, a lot of time, you know, you have I wasn't assigned to students, but they'd say, well, you just kind of look out for, you know, because you're like, I'm not doing anything that I think was crazy to me. Everything was just real okay. So it was okay. It was, and I went home a lot on weekends. When I got to UNC, I got a car. My parents, you know, bought me a car. So I could go, and a lot of weekends. I stayed when I had classes on Saturday that I used to. But other than that, a lot of times I went home or someplace, out to Greensboro somewhere. So I didn't do a lot of socializing outside of just a normal week stuff. And I did go to church there. I did do that.
In Chapel Hill? Mm-hmm. Which church was it?
All I know is it was a Methodist church close by within walking distance, because I was brought up in a church, and if I'm going to be here some Sundays, I need to find a place to go to church. And that was good. And they try to reach out, you know, but you can't make a lot of their other meetings and services because you've got a crazy schedule at school, or you've got to study and whatever. And like I said, after my first year, I got married. So that limited me to some things anyway.
Did you have a positive experience going to that church?
Pretty much. But then see, a lot of us thought, okay, well, we need to go to church. So it, be it black, white, blue, green, you know, students were ending up at church on Sunday mornings. So that was good.
Were you involved in any organizations on campus?
Other than, I think, like a business group, club type deal, but that was about it, because I'm like, you know, I don't really have the time or focus. I was a student who had to really study to get through my curriculum. I was much involved in that.
So do you remember anything about the Black student movement and the things that they did during your time at UNC?
They were always at the forefront of telling us what was going on for those of us who weren't at, you know, I mean, we're all Black students, so of course we, in a way, were members, but we didn't always go to all the meetings. I think it was more an aware thing, keeping you aware and keeping you focused on the fact that even though you're here and trying to do things, there's still so much more we have to do, which I don't think escaped any of us. We knew that, but we knew a way to do it for some of us was to complete what we were supposed to do.
Do you remember any of the, like, specific things they did, like helping the food workers in the dining hall? And
I know that, and most of that was done by the time I was there, that they had actual some sit-ins and stuff, right, 66, 67, probably, when I was in UNCG. And that was for not only integration, but for trying to improve the rights of people. And for most of us who were Black that were there, we already felt like we needed to try to do, to be more cordial, to be more understanding of the Black workers that were there, just period. Because most of them were the people that were cleaning or cooking or doing whatever. And they always were saying, you know, we have to keep in mind the fact that they're trying to still earn a living and do their things, and, you know, while we're here at school, but we have to be positive because these are people too, you know, mm-hmm. other people. So I think they tried to keep us focused on life is still going on even though you're here in school. I don't know if that answers it, but that's pretty much what I remember.
Yeah, so the food worker strike was from February to December of 69.
Yeah, and they, a lot of times they're saying don't go there to, you know, of course you have other choices anyway, so a lot of times we didn't, trying to let them know that we believed in the fact that they needed to be treated better, earn more, so you just found someplace else to eat, you know, I mean, a lot of us weren't on strictly meal plans at that time, you know, you just had, see, when I first went to school, you were on a meal plan, because that was UNCG, but the others, you had so much that was, you know, you could go wherever you wanted to go. So we were like, okay, well, if they're trying to get better here, then we don't need to go here and support, you know, the fact that we don't care what they get paid, because that's not right. So then you just went, you know, other places that were not in the spotlight at the time.
So how do you think being a transfer student affected your experiences at UNC? I think it was different than had you had the opportunity to go there the entire 4 years.
I think UNCG was a good place to start for me. It was smaller, and you know, even though I'd been to Carolina before for some music things, I don't think I knew how big the campus actually was, the number of people. So I think it was a good thing for me, and to get the realization that even though you're here, people may not want you here, and to get into that mindset before I went to Carolina, because I'm like, okay, you may not want me here, but I'm here, and I've got 2 years behind me, and I just want to get my other two and be done. And so just let me do my classes. I had instructors even at Carolina that did not want us there. I had one particular one in my major, and I remember, and he told me, he said, well, I don't really think you need to be an accountant. I thought, man, you can say that now, because I was in my seat. I'm like, forget you. And someone told me once, they said, well, his wife, you know, makes him feel very small, so he has to take it out on the students. I said, he has to take it out on some students and take it out on all of us. And I did not fare very well in the class, but I did enough to get by. So, like, but you're not changing my mind because you're doing this in this class. This is what I'm going to do if the Lord's willing, and I'm going to do it. So, I mean, even there, I mean, I had the other guy in UNCG that I came out okay with. This one, I didn't even see going, and nobody said anything. Because even though I had black fellows that were friends, either they hadn't had him or... So, you know, I was in a class maybe with white males. You know, and I'm just sitting there. And there were not... I don't say there were five of us in accounting when I was there. I doubt there were that many.
Five women.
Yeah. Not even female. You know, just female, just mm-hmm. women. There weren't.
And then how many black women do you think?
Now? Or the, oh,
when you were there?
Probably not anymore. Probably not a half dozen. Really, there were not. See, that's why they didn't accept them. Because they wanted, I think they wanted us to all change and not do strict accounting, but do business. And I'm like, but I want my major in accounting. Understand, I know, I want this. So they would be in business, maybe administration or something, but not a concentration in accounting. And I wanted a concentration in accounting, so that was the route I went. So there were not a lot of females, period, and there were not a lot of black females in any of the business at the time. They were basically in nursing, what few there were, and some of the things that might lead, like English and stuff, that might lead into maybe a teaching career. But not, they weren't just, the girls that came in after I did, the group that came in, because it was more, were probably more that were going to go into some newer areas that really hadn't been done. But there weren't a whole lot of just black females there when I went. I'm like, okay, well, this is what I needed to be aware of before I came here. And definitely in my class. Like I said, I'd be the only female in some, in most of them, and the only black in a lot. I'm like, okay. Because the fellas were older, so they're already through some of the classes. They were just telling me, do whatever and don't mm-hmm. do this and whatever. And some of them were business majors, not necessarily accounting majors. So it was interesting.
What do you remember any, I guess, specific instances with your peers? Were they accepting of you, your like fellow, the people in your class?
For the most part. I mean, you had some that didn't speak to you the whole semester, but that's okay. Then you had others. I can remember a couple of white fellas, and they'd come out and they'd say, okay, well, we're going to go do thus and so because we're going to study for this. And if you're, you know, around, you want to come and join us, or we talk about assignments or stuff. I mean, they were encouraging and whatever, and it wasn't everybody. You know, I could probably was, you know, if it was six people, the others were just like, well, you're here. Just don't bother me. I'm not going to bother you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So do you think that the negativity kind of came like from a top-down method of like the administration and like the professors?
It possibly did at the time because it was a change that was happening, and a lot of places were not quite ready for the change. And mm-hmm. we were there saying, well, we want the change. We want it now, you know, in our very subtle way of black movement. And they were trying to grasp whatever. And that's what happened. Yeah, so I'm sure it didn't just start with an individual. I'm sure there were tones and things that we didn't see, but you could get it from the instructors or you could get it from the other students, you know. And I guess after they saw that most of us, for the most part, were going to try to maintain and be there, they just, you just leave me alone, I'll leave you alone. Okay, that's fine. Because I didn't hang out with a lot of them. Like I said, I hung out with the fellas. Then as girls came in other areas and you get to meet them because of your dorm and stuff, you know, you might hang with them. But it was a male-dominated thing. And if I had thought that way before, you know, would I have changed maybe? I don't know. But, I mean, you know, it was accounting, and I'm like, okay. Everybody says, you like math? I'm like, accounting is not really math, you know, it's different. But I did like math, and so I thought, well, business, math, whatever.
Besides the instance you told me about your first roommate, do you remember any other, like, personal encounters on campus, like, in regards to racial relations or...
Other than the fact that you don't get included, if sometime in the dorm, if there are things going on in a certain group, they may feel like you wouldn't feel comfortable being involved with their little group set. You know what I'm saying? You find out later and you think, oh, why'd y'all do such and such? Oh, well, we just decided, this group of us. But, like, if you're in the dorm on the hall, you know, it kind of be nice to be invited whether you went or not. The second year, I, like I said, I had a better roommate. So, I mean, we did things, you know, even if the other people didn't. And then, plus, I was married and my, you know, was back and forth. My ex-husband was back and forth. So, I'm like, okay, you know. But you just didn't get the close friendship with anybody. Not like I had more of that at UNCG because it was a group of black girls, coming in. And we all just kind of hung together because we were all roommates, too. Most of us were roomed with each other. See, I was at Carolina, and I was, for a while, rooming with white students, you know, found out that things didn't grow out of my ears, and wasn't so contagious, and so whatever. And then, like I said, they were accepting, but it wasn't like, would you want to come go home with me if they live close for dinner, or the things that maybe some of us would do if we were, you know, doing that. You just didn't have that, but that was okay. You know, I certainly, if my parents came up and there was somebody close and it was basically, you know, they said, well, they're going to take me out to dinner if you'd like to come with us, you know, enjoy. But maybe not so much for the girl, but they know their parents and they know family. And so maybe you just don't bring that to the, and so you're like, you understand, you know, they're like, my family's coming, blah, blah, you know, you hear people talking about it, and maybe invite, but you're like, well, I wouldn't expect any. That's the way I felt. I wasn't going to get one anyway, and if I did, I'd probably fall out, because I'm like, oh, gosh, I'm surprised. But, I mean, the girls themselves, I think, were trying to be as accepting as they thought they could, given their backgrounds and whatever.
If you feel comfortable talking about it, how was it being married and still?
It was different. It was different. All my family said was, you are going to complete school. Yes, I'm going to complete school. When the girls, I think, found out, because I told them after, you know, in the summer, a lot of them were, well, how in the world are you doing that? You know, and he was someplace else working. I'm like, I'm doing what I have to do because I don't intend that I'm just going to stop and he's going to take care of me for the rest of my life. I'm this far, you know. And it was a little stressful, but you know, I was still there to finish what I was supposed to do. So I managed to get through it.
What do you think was your most joyous time at UNC?
Graduation. No, that's joyous for my parents. Cause like I said, I came back in March just for them. Well, not just for them, but I think it did my dad good to see. He got his picture near the old well, and so that was that he had in his den for a while he lived. I think it was good for, I guess, getting through everything and still feeling like I can do this, even though it was getting close to the end. I'm like, I can actually do this. I didn't have as much of a social life as my ex-husband did when he was on campus, because he was only on campus with me for a short span of time. But I didn't have the, mainly because I'm just a different person. He's a fella, and there were fellas there, so of course they're going to do things. Mine was like, okay, I'm here. I spent time off campus on other campuses with friends. And I just kept thinking, but this is the path I chose, and this is what I want to do, and it's going to come out okay. And so I think when I finally finished, it was just like, I got done. I'm finished. I completed what I said I was going to do. I have my degree. And now, you know, I interviewed and stuff, and I was happy with the interviewing process. If that's anything, you know, people came, and I had a cousin who was a recruiter for RCA at the time, and he said, well, interview with RCA, because they were in New Jersey at the time. And he said, and I said, well, I'm not planning to move to New Jersey, so therefore, you know, he said, but interview anyway. It's a good experience. And so I sort of enjoyed the, you get to meet people, and you get to see, and they get to see different sides of you, ask questions and say things, and this is what we're doing. And you thought, well, I'm to that point, you know, where I can actually go and do this and make some decisions. And I made it. So that was, I guess, a time when you're in it. I don't know that it's always so joyous, is not the word, but you're just thinking of the end of what you want to do, or that I'm accomplishing what I set out to do.
So where was your husband the last year?
The last year he was in Virginia, in Williamsburg, because he was working for Woolworth at the time as a manager. So that was his particular store that he, so he was there that last year or so. So I was up there the summer when I had to go back for the fall. I was in Williamsburg that summer, but then I came back in the fall. And thankfully was getting my last courses in.
So let's move to your time after UNC. What did you do after you graduated?
I took a little vacation. Well, no. I actually finished my coursework, and we were, by that time, Mac's husband was back in the area, and we were going to move in to Greensboro, because he had position, I think, at another Woolworth in Greensboro then. And I was set to go to work for the IRS as an agent or some auditor or something. I mean, that's where I had said, you know, but I wanted to take a little break. And he and I ended up going to New Jersey to visit family. And this was the cousin's husband who had said, interview with RCA. And he said, well, why are you here? Why don't you go out there and talk to him? And I said, well, if I got something, I couldn't, you know, my family's not going to want me to move up here. But I actually got a job offer while I was on vacation. So we said, and he was looking to make a change anyway, and he was more into marketing and stuff like that. So we made the move.
So how long were you in New Jersey?
9 years.
And did you work with RCA the entire time you were?
I worked with RCA for about 2 years, and then I went with a nonprofit group, the Philadelphia Urban Coalition, where we help businesses get started. I worked with the Small Business Administration and all that kind of good stuff, and helped some minority businesses get their start. And so I worked with them for like 6 or 7 years before I moved. And then I moved back to North Carolina.
Is that when you had your daughter?
My daughter was born in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And she'll tell you she's not from North Carolina. She's from, she said, not that there's anything, but tell people, I wasn't born here. I said, no, you weren't. We came back when she was a little over 4.
And then you moved to not Stanford?
No. Okay. I moved to, I came back home, and I went to Jacksonville, North Carolina, and I worked with the bank as an auditor. Would have probably stayed there, but my goal had been years ago, and it's gone now, to be study for CPA exam, because I thought, I'm going to do this. So I actually got a job with a CPA firm in Durham, so I moved from Jacksonville with the bank auditing stuff to Durham. And then found out that wasn't going to be the life for me with, because I was divorced by then, a small child, with traveling and stuff. I'm like, oh no, as much as I can't do this, I've got to find something different. And was reading the paper in Durham one night and saw an ad for something here in Sanford for, and I thought, could do that. You know, things they were, I'm like, I can do that. I've done, you know, whatever. And I actually sent a resume in, you know, then that's when you used, they had it in the paper and you did, you know, send it in, mailed it in and didn't think anything more about it until the person actually called me and said, well, we have your, and we are interested. I'm like, oh, please. And so I actually came down to, because this is like a halfway point, kind of a halfway point for my parents when they'd pick my daughter up for a break or something and she'd come visit them. And so I was bringing her at one particular time and I said, well, I can meet you like that, whatever. And met with him and he said, well, I think we're really interested now. Can you come and do an interview? I'm like, yeah, people, I'm trying to maintain my job, you know, where I was. But I came and they offered me a job. My dad said, well, how fast can you take it? Because it was more money than I was making as a staff accountant. And at the time, I know with the family, I needed to do that. So, and it, plus, as an accountant, you have to travel sometime. And I wasn't in a position right then when she was little to do that. I didn't think that was a good fit for me, being a single parent. So I decided to come here. And oh, however many years, 31 years later, we're still here. I mean, I tell people, I'm not from Sanford. I've just lived here that long.
So are your parents still in Maxon?
My parents, they're deceased now, but they were both in Maxon. My mother's been dead 12 or 13 years. My dad died 20-some years ago, but I actually got to Sanford before he passed because he told me if I kept moving, he was going to have to shoot my foot because he wanted me to stay in one place. And I said, but every move, and he said, well, you're there now, stay there. And then not too long after that, he got sick and passed. But my mother, you know, so told her, I said, well, I stayed with the company, and through all the ups and downs of the company, just managed to stay there and do whatever for 30-some years.
And do you still work there?
No.
No.
I retired. I decided it was time to get out before I went crazy there were some changes going on. It's a part of the Fiat Group Automotive, and now they're Fiat Chrysler, Daimler Chrysler, whatever, however they term it now. And the question had been posed to my boss, who's a lady. They wanted to know when I might be retiring. And she asked it in a good way, not as a way that I could come back and say, oh, well, you harassed me, you know, because they wanted to line up my replacement. And I told her I really hadn't thought about it. I said I haven't, and I was telling the truth. And I think I was something like, I prayed to get to 65 so I could be sure I had Medicare, because, you know. And then I was probably 65 or so. And so I said, well, I'll let you know. And then I was talking to my daughter. I said, I need to do something. I always prayed, Lord, if it's going to be my time to leave someplace, if there's any way you can let me know. I know that's asking a lot of you. So when I said, okay, this is his way of telling me, get everything in order. Because if you don't leave, then there's somebody, you know. So I ended up giving her time framework and ended up staying 6 or 8 months longer than I had originally planned. But that's because she was looking for a particular person to fill, whatever. And she said, well, you don't have to leave, because that boss that asked her left. I mean, he was transferred. And she said, you can, I said, I don't really. I think if they start looking higher up and looking at ages, because I was one of the oldest ones there. You know, I have people that have been there longer than I had, but they weren't as old as I was. So, you know, so I'm like, okay, you know, just go with the flow. Just, so I retired a couple of years. It's been almost 3 years now. So I'm thankful to get to the place where, like, you don't have to worry about it. It was a lot. I did a lot. We're Italian based, American part of the Italian company, and we had to do a lot. So, which meant when you get there at 8 o'clock in the morning, it's already 2 o'clock in the afternoon their time. So you're already behind from whatever. And then when you hope they're gone home, they're still there. At, you know, maybe 2 o'clock our time, you think, well, they're gone. By sending you something, an email, a telephone call. Home, you know, could you just go home? Don't leave me alone. So it was time. I was putting in a lot of overtime, as I said, and not getting paid for it. So I thought it was time, and they were going to be changing some things. And I said, you know, it might just be a good time just to not have to worry about I learned systems. I've been to Italy to learn a couple of you've done enough now. It's time to get out while you can.
How was that, going to Italy?
If we could have done some sightseeing, it would have been wonderful. I went twice for two different trainings.
Mm-hmm.
Once with my boss and then once with a coworker. And it was interesting. We met a lot of people from other countries. The lady that was the first year, we had to use the earphones because it was in Italian. And they had it for each of the countries because China was there and Germany, all the. So they had it set up. And then we broke into groups. Hopefully she'll get that. We broke into groups that would. Okay, Miss Valencia, I know you're asleep. Oh, she got it. I know she took a nap because she got quiet. It was learning a new system. And my boss and I actually had to come back and decipher. But the ladies we trained with were very good, and they spoke some English.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one spoke very good English, speaks five languages or something. And so that was good. And the second time, the coworker and I were there to learn and change system again, and they wanted, you know, people. And I came back and I said, okay, I'm going to be leaving this company soon because I don't understand. I'm not the most computer literate person in the world. I don't understand all these things they're telling me. They're bouncing. And my coworker was very good at that. And she said, well, I understood. I'm like, okay, fine. So I'm thinking, I'll just be finding another job. And this was 2001, before 9/11. So I was thinking, you know, what am I going to do? I'm older now. I've got to find something else. It didn't work. I mean, it worked out that I was the one, because I'd always been doing it. I was the one to get the training and have to work with them on the phone, through email, through everything else to get it done. And my boss just said, well, the other lady didn't really have an interest in it. And she said, she doesn't know like you know some of the things. So it's still yours. I'm like, okay. So that was 2001. So by 2013, I was thinking, it's been time for me to do something else. You know. So I said, I don't know if I'll do anything else. You know, I do volunteer stuff now for church and stuff, but I don't know if I'll. I never thought I would just retire and be retired, but hadn't seen anything else that really piqued my interest, though. And I've got things to do.
I was going to ask you what you do these days. So you said volunteering.
I do. I'm the treasurer of our church, so that could be busy if you let it. And I do a lot with that just because I'm responsible for the monies and all the accounts and stuff like that. So it still keeps my accounting going.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a member of a couple other organizations. One, I call it an adult 4-H for the ladies. And I don't know why they have me in there, because I don't like to cook extra and I don't like to sew or do it. But I went in because a friend was in there and she wanted some more minority faces, as she called it, in the group. And they do have some interesting topics. You know, we learn lifestyle things. We've learned about credit stuff. You know, we do all kinds of things across the board. And I help with them, and I'll do volunteer for their groups. We take some of our information to churches and to schools and other agencies like that when we have a program. Is that something you need to get? Friends say, where is she? Why would she answer the phone? But so I do that, and I'm still trying to tackle things here. I've been trying to tackle them for a while. I did a lot in the years that I was here of caregiving, because my parents live about a little over an hour away, and a lot of my aunts and things that were older were there too. So I was a caregiver till the last one passed away in like 2009. So I was back and forth on weekends and stuff. So a lot of things I didn't ever get to do or didn't do, because I had to, that was priority, family was priority. Mm-hmm. And then after they pass, of course, then there's always the stuff that goes with someone's passing and trying to get it all settled and everything. So it's taken me a while, but I don't stay bored, and I volunteer at school sometimes. So I'm, you know, and when my daughter needs somebody to talk about accounting, since she teaches in middle school, I'll go tell them what little bit I do know, things like that. I work with Girl Scouts. I've been a Girl Scout for like almost 30 years, not quite about 30 yet. So, because I went as an adult, but she went up through it and earned her gold award. So I just stayed in it after she left. So I kind of try to help with them as they need me. I don't have a troop anymore, thank the Lord.
Well, that That probably keeps you busy.
It does. It does. It's good to keep interaction with some of you. I would do more, but the children now are all different. And I don't want to kill anybody's child at my age because I really don't want to go to jail. And so, that kind of thing. But it's sometimes I'll think, well, I could do something. I think, no, you can't. You still need. I have a garage full, not talking about the house, of things that I brought from my parents and my family members, memorabilia that I need to go through and sort. I'm not talking about thing. I'm talking about scrapbooks and things off walls that were very, significant that I are still packed up in the boxes in the garage. So I'm, trying to get myself to the point. I thought, well, if I can get here done a little bit, then I go work in the garage and then I'll have a place to put it. I won't have to worry about moving it, taking it down. But that's why she said my yearbook is probably out there.
So my last question, looking back, how would you describe your time at UNC?
The challenge that I told you probably had. It was very, and interesting is not a good word, but it was informative, and I guess it set the tone for me coming into the work world because, and when I say tone, I don't mean just the curriculum. I mean actually knowing that everything is not going to be readily yours. Okay? That you're going to have to make your way through it. That you're not going to always have people that are going to support you, but you know what you've done, you know how to do things, and you can do it. And so you just go out, if you conquered them, I felt like it was a conquest. If I conquered Carolina, I could go just about anywhere and do anything because, I meet people now and I'm just like, black, white, blue, it doesn't matter. You're just people. And I know what I went through, and I think I like to have people feel comfortable at ease and knowing that they can do things. So I'm like, I gained all of that because I came from a high school class of 49. There were 49 in my class. And very small class, and I think we've got people in our class there's a fellow now who's a CPA who wasn't even interested in that kind of stuff in high school. Some have been, in the business and higher, parts of it. We've got people that are teachers, people have done things. And I'm thinking to come from that background and go to a school, and I was the first at my school to attempt to go to a white school. And to think, as somebody, as a teacher told me, don't go up there and fail. Encouraging words, sir. Really, really good. But I mean, everybody else was saying, you can do that. I'm thinking, I can do this. So now I think, I can not only say I want to do it, but I can do it. And I think if Carolina didn't teach me anything else, it taught me, you can do this. You just have to keep focusing on what it is you want to accomplish, and you'll do it. And it may not always work out exactly. It's not the plan that I had 50 years ago, whatever. But it's the plan I guess I was supposed to have, and I just, it wasn't his plan for me. It was my plan for me, and he had to come down and say, the Lord, this is where you're going to need to go, and you're going to need to do this. Because I always, my dad had said, well, you'll be a CPA, and I never got there, and I always thought, oh, but I thought, but what you did and what your life and your work accounts for a lot of stuff, and it's important. So that's good. And I mean, he wouldn't, I think in this day, he'd say, well, you did well, you did okay. But that was something, it's in the back of your mind, that's what I'm supposed to do, and I didn't. I'm like, okay, but you accomplished maintaining and raising the child and getting your life's work done and caregiving, and I never know how to do that with all them from a distance. I had to do that because there are so few of us cousins that or children that we had to kind of take on responsibility. Family is very important, and so I felt like that just prepared me for the challenges of today. So I'm like, okay, so whatever it is now, it's like, okay. A lot of times I look back, I think, if you get through Carolina, UNCG, you can handle this. So I guess it just makes you stronger or more set on accomplishing what you know you can.
Do you have anything else that you'd like to share with
I
me?
think I've shared more than enough. My 15 minutes went on over an hour and a half.
That is what you told me on the phone.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions for me?
How is the life there now? What do you think as a person? Okay. No, I don't have anything else for you, and I encourage everybody to just do the best they can wherever they are, Carolina or